All right. Good morning, everyone. How are you guys doing so far? Like the conference? Cool. So ready to talk about C++? Yeah? Lovely. We love C++. I want to thank you for coming to the session. I know it's early in the morning. I appreciate everyone got up early and come here. It's really a pleasure to be here to share with you some of the features we're doing for C++ developers in Visual Studio 2012. My name is Rong Lu, and I'm a program manager on Visual C++ team at Microsoft. Let's see what we're going to cover today. So the agenda is really simple. We're going to start with a recap of the ALM features in 2010. Today, and we're going to talk about what's new coming in the next version, and I will spend a lot of time doing demos just to show you the real bits, and I'll take questions at the end and some resources. Just a quick show of hands before we start. So there is a foundation session on Monday, covered all the ALM features. I wonder how many people was there. Okay, so that's about one. Third. Okay, so you might see, you might have seen some of the ALM features we have in next version. I am not going to repeat those because they are already covered. I am going to focus on the features that, how we can use those in the C++ context. So I'm going to use all C++ apps for demos, but I will also mention what are the other new general features that you also can use for C++. So what we have in 2010, how many people are using 2010 today? Just curious. Wow, that's almost everyone. Awesome. but you might not know that we have all these features in the box. So in VS Premium SKU, we have code coverage, static analysis, we have a profiler. We have a profiler for concurrency, for parallel programming as well. That's in premium. In VS Ultimate, we have load testing and lab management. That's primarily focusing on the testing side. And of course, Team Foundation Server. TFS works great with C++. So all these features we have, great features, source code control, team build, they all work beautifully with C++. Just a few screenshots to recap what we have in 2010. So there's a profiler. The other day, someone was asking what kind of profiler we use. We actually ship a profiler for C++ in Visual Studio. In 2010, it is in the premium SKU, so you have to have that SKU to use this feature. But it's pretty handy, and you can measure the performance of your app and identify the bottlenecks. The other feature we have, this one is available in Ultimate. This is what we call load testing. It's like a stress testing. You want to put a lot of stress on your app and see how it reacts under those extreme situations. So this feature shows you all these shows you the diagrams to show you how the app reacts. And last but not least, I want to show you a few screenshots of the parallel profiler we have in 2010. Some people may not realize that we did actually ship a separate profiler. If you're doing parallel programming, if you're utilizing multiple cores on your machine, if your app is using multiple cores, how do you measure the performance of your app? So this is a view of your CPU utilization. So on the diagram here, So this machine has actually four cores. So you can see 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And the green stands for your process. This is the CPU your process is using out of these four cores. And the gray area is the idle time. And the yellow one is the other processes. So from this view, you will see how many CPUs that your app is using. If your app is intended to use multiple cores, but actually shows only be using one core at some point, then you might want to check what is going wrong here. So we do have tools like that to help you identify those issues. So this is another view, the same feature, another view that shows you different threads. Like these green ones are when your threads are being executed. And red stands for the synchronization that's happening between threads. So you will see at a certain point of time how many of your threads are being executed and when synchronization happens. In this case, it's running pretty well that you are utilizing all these cores, but sometimes you'll see that threads block each other because of synchronization or waiting on I/O, all these issues. So you will see that on such a diagram. The last view we have is the logical cores. In this case, we have four cores, and you'll see we have a different color to stand for each thread. So see how these threads are being executed on which core, and you can track down issues from there. So just quickly show you that. And now we're going to move on to 2012, which is a really exciting release for us. For those of you who have been to the foundation session, you probably are familiar with this. These are some of the new features we have in Visual Studio 2012 and Team Foundation Server 2012. That's some of the features you actually need to have TFS to get it work. So this release, the AOM features, a lot of them are focusing on the agile development. Quick show of hands, how many of you guys are using agile development process at this point? Okay, that's about half. Cool. A lot of the terms are actually from agile world, like user story, backlog management. So we built those features into the TFS new version, then you can use them from there. We have lightweight requirements. It's like if you want to do a quick mock-up of your app, a quick UI mock-up, you can use a couple of different apps. You can use Visio, you can use other tools. You can also use the feature we ship in the next version, which is we called lightweight requirements. It's actually an add-on to PowerPoint, which is an app that almost everyone is familiar with. You can start from there. We ship in the box a lot of the shapes, like Windows Phone, Metro, if you want to build those, you can use those shapes from there. Of course, sprint planning, task board planning, we also ship those. Context switching, which is a really awesome feature that I like. Sure, Cameron has shown that in the foundation session. The idea is when you're focusing on your task in Visual Studio, you're in your zone, and all of a sudden there's another task, maybe high priority, that you have to deal at this point. So you have to stop what you're doing and switch to the other task. And then when you're done, you'll come back and resume your work. Now, the problem with that, I'm sure everyone probably have experience like that. The problem with that is it takes some time for you to come back and switch context, come back to the work you were doing. Especially with Visual Studio, you had your breakpoint set, you have all the tool windows open, all the files open. It takes a while for you to get them all back. So the feature is have Visual Studio save all the state so you can actually tell Visual Studio to pause the work you're doing. So all the changes you're making, Visual Studio is going to package them up and send it over to TFS, store there. And when you're ready to come back, just tell Visual Studio, I'm ready to resume. So Visual Studio will get the information, restore everything back in your Visual Studio IDE. So that includes the files you open, the tool windows you open, including their layout, the breakpoints you have set, changes you have made. So you are right back in your zone in a minute, in a second. So that's that. Stakeholder feedback. So that's a little tool that, like, management team, they can give feedback on the project. Code review, so if you ever require code review from your peers, you can use that feature right within Visual Studio. You don't have to switch to another tool. You don't have to leave the zone. And some other testing features as well. So just want to give you an idea of what we have. I just want to mention that all these features work great with C++. You can use, if you're doing C++ development, you can use any of these features. No problem, work beautifully. But that's not our focus today. What I wanted to talk about is the additional features we added in next version for C++. Some of these I'll mention later that are unique for C++, and some of these are consistent across managed and native code, but I want to show you in the context of C++. All right, let's dive into a demo first. Okay, see some C++ code. So the idea of the architecture discovery tool is really about when you're facing existing code base, like if I'm working to a new project, if you joined a new company working to a new project, and the project has existed for many, many years, you are asked to get familiar with the code base because you will be owning the code base going forward. You might be fixing bugs. You want to make sure that's still working. So the first challenge you might be facing will be, how do I understand the existing code base right there? I have no idea how it works. You might be looking for some kind of architectural diagram somewhere. Maybe it's a Visual, it's a Word document. But I was never able to find that. Are you able to find those? No? All right. So let's see what we can do in Visual Studio to help us out in those situations. Now, what I have here is an C++ MFC application. The first thing I might do when I take on a new app is to build and F5 and see if it works. So I'm going to straight to F5 this app. Looks like it's at least it has launched. Let's see what we can do with the app. It's actually called a photo viewer where you can see your photos. The very basic feature here is to open a folder from your local drive and load the pictures in that folder. Now I can double click on a picture, navigate, do some rotation all there. Switch to the other tab. This is a show tab, like the PowerPoint show. Let's see what it can do. What it does is actually place all the images, and between images we'll see a transition where it rotates. The image rotates and disappears from the center of the screen. Are those beautiful pictures? Because I took them. All right, so it looks like it's working pretty well. But what I want to do with this is, after you're looking at all these images, it kind of gets boring because the transition always happens, rotating, disappear from the center of the screen. What I want to do is, between the images, when the transition happens, I want it to rotate and disappear randomly from random directions, some northwest, northeast, so all these kind of directions. Okay, so the only thing I know about this app is when I start the slideshow play, the menu is called Start. That's all. That's the only thing I know about it. All right, let's find our architectural diagram here and try to figure out what is happening in this app. Now, the way you do it, you don't need a Word document or anything. All you need is Visual Studio. So you can ask Visual Studio to generate such a diagram from your source code right here. You just go to generate dependency graph and then go to for solution. That's going to generate a dependency graph for your whole solution. We'll talk about the for include file a bit later. Now, for now, we're going to do this whole solution. So what is happening here is the tool is building your solution, and it's looking at the binaries that gets generated, crack open the information in that binary. Of course, it also looks into the PDB files for some additional information, but basically it doesn't look at your source code. So what that means is you can actually use this diagram to crack open any arbitrary binaries. It doesn't require source code. Let's see what we got here. Now, this is a high-level overview of the architecture of your app. It's pretty straightforward in this case. It's an Axie that calls the library, and both have dependencies on some external libraries, like MFC in this case. Now, one thing to notice is that this diagram, we make it so that you can make it your own diagram. So if you like to keep some information on the diagram, keep it. If you don't like some information that are irrelevant to you, delete them, because it's your diagram. You can edit them the way you want it. In this case, I'm going to delete externals, because I don't care about it. You can also delete things in these two binaries. It's not going to affect your source code. Okay, let's expand that and see what's in there. So these are the four namespaces in that binary. Okay, we can expand even more. Expand this namespace, you will actually see the classes, the methods that are in there. Okay, now it gets pretty big when I expand a certain class and all the methods that it has. All right. Now, when a diagram gets that big, what functionality we need? Big screen. What I want would be a search, right? You can actually do that. Control F, just the way you want it. What we are looking for is the button that says start. That's all I know. So I want to search for start. It highlights. Zoom in. It actually highlights the method that has a start in it, so I don't have to look around and look for that. It helps a little bit to help me navigate in the diagram. Now, the other thing you'll notice is if you select that particular node, all the links will be highlighted as well. This going outgoing links. I can also move the node around. Remember I said this is your diagram. You can move things around the way you want it. Now, if we look at the method that this method is calling, you'll see obviously there are three things that this method does, right? First of all, get current document. It creates a transition effect somehow to make the transition between the images, and hides scroll bar, because when I play, it's a full screen, it removes the scroll bar. So I kind of get an idea of what the method does without even having to look at the code. I don't have to read line by line to understand that. The other thing that's useful from this diagram is it helps you to identify the key components in your application. In this case, if you look at the get document, look at how many incoming links it has, right? So if you're making changes to this particular method, you might want to be careful because a lot of things are dependent on it. So we might want to highlight this. I said it's your diagram. Colorize it. I give it a color. So everyone who will be modifying this method should be careful because it's a key component there. It's just an example of what you can use out of the diagram. All right, let's go back to the start. What I want to do is to make some changes to the way the images transit between each other, right? So I might want to just go jump into this method right away. I don't even have to go to the start menu. So how do I navigate to my source code? Just like you would imagine, F12 is your friend. Go to definition is the same as in source code. So you can use a menu, you can press F12. I'll just press F12. It takes me right into my source code. Now this is create transition effect. Now I'm ready to make some changes to my code. You'll see that this is my graphics controller, and at image transition, of course, it's using this rotate effect. What I want to do is to add a little bit things to this rotate effect so that it can rotate while move the image to different directions. So I F12 to the definition of this rotate effect. I'll see that it's actually defined as a C transition effect. Now I'm going there, which is actually a struct. And I noticed that it actually has a set move direction method. Let's see what it does. Oh, okay, it's not implemented. So what I want to do here is to set the move direction. I want it to be random just to make it fun. So I'll be using a switch and just give it a random number so it can move to a random direction. One thing I want to mention here is we have added a code snippet for C++. So you can use switch and tab and generate some code snippet for you. You can also, if you wanted to surround it with ifdef, we have that as well. So if you do that, it wraps around with ifdef. So just some little improvements we have in IDE. All right, for now I'm going to remove that. And I'm going to use random function molded by 4. So the result will be 4, 0, 1, 2, 3, right? 4 cases. So I'm going to, instead of having you watching me typing, I'm just going to paste that in, which is pretty straightforward. I case 0, 1, 2, 3, it moves into different directions, and it's random. Now, all I have to do is to set the rotate effect to be using set moving directions. So every time between the transition, you will be setting the move direction. Okay. I'm going to close this and run this again and see if it works. To show and rotate and start. All right, it works. So now it goes to different directions randomly. All right. Okay, so what I showed you is the dependency graph for your whole solution. We can look at it from high level and drill into the information you need. The other thing I want to show you, which is what I just mentioned, the include file. So if we look at this file, which is typical C++ file, it's a CPP. It includes a bunch of header files. Now, these header files might include other header files. Well, sometimes I got lost in those relationships. Now, we can actually use the dependency graph for include file here and generate a diagram for my include file. So I can see all the relationships, how these files are including each other. Isn't that nice? All right, let's see what we have here. This is the file I started with. This is the CPP file I start with. It has a bunch of header files that it's including. And these header files are actually including other header files. So this way you'll see, well, these are all the header files I'm including. Now you'll be able to identify the key header files in your solution as well. So this is purely from file standpoint of view. It's not the binary level information. So that's another aspect that you can use from here, which is unique to C++. Now sometimes you might want to, what we do is we write code first, and somehow our boss will be asking us to write a document for those code, a design doc, something like that. Now what you can do, the other use of these diagrams is copy those files as an image, and you can then paste it to anywhere you want, to a document, so you don't have to draw yourself. Is that nice? Awesome. Okay, so I showed you two kind of diagrams. The other thing I want to show you is sometimes, because we are able to look at the app from top down at this point, right? We start with the whole solution, then we drill into the information inside. Sometimes people are asking if they can start from bottom up. Like, I have got this huge solution. I have got 20 projects in it. I don't want to look at everything because I might not care about everything. I want to start from bottom up. Can I just focus on the things I care about and build diagrams from there? You can actually do that. I want to introduce to you this new tool window we have, which is what we called Architecture Explorer. Now, from here, select the class view. It shows me all the namespaces. It's basically the same information I was able to see in the other diagram. I see the global namespace for all the types. There are too many, so I want to use search again. Remember the class we were looking at was the viewer. Let's do just view, see what it has. All right, so it filter the whole list down to three types, so I can just focus on these if I wanted. Now, let's just reuse this diagram. And then select all of these three and drag and drop them onto the diagram. All right. Okay, so this diagram has similar information what we had before, but it's much simpler because it's only down to the three key elements I want. You can still expand each of these elements and be able to use all the other functionalities we had before. So you can focus on the things you care about. All right, so we'll switch back. Just to summarize what we have seen so far. Dependency graph, use it to help better understand your code. You can use the diagram for the whole solution, for include files. You can fully edit your diagram, make it your own diagram. And also use the Architecture Explorer to browse the assets, fill down to the things you want, and build diagrams from there. All right, now let's move on to the other topic, which is code analysis. I don't usually put that many words in one slide But I love the code so much, so I have to do that. This is from John Carmack. He's the founder and technical director of ID Software. They produce awesome games on different platforms. So he mentioned that in his blog, how important he sees code analysis. So he said, just let me walk you through what he said. The most important thing I've done as a programmer in recent years is to aggressively pursue static analysis. Even more valuable than the hundreds of serious bugs I've prevented with it is the change in the mindset about the way I view software reliability and code quality. So that's his general statement about code quality. He sees very high of the value of code analysis. And the most key important part is the second quote, because it talks about the feature we ship in this studio. So he actually has gone and used a couple of different code analysis tools out there. But he had good things to say about the feature we ship in Visual Studio. So he said, eventually I had all the code used to build the 360, which is the Xbox 360 game, compiling without any warnings with slash analyze enabled. So slash analyze is another way to say the feature we have in Visual Studio, because we implemented as a switch to the core compiler. So all you need to do is to throw this one more switch, slash analyze, to your compilation. He said this did slow down compile somewhat, but slash analyze is by far the fastest analysis tool I work with, and it's so worth it. We are pretty happy to see that, because we did not ask him to write down this for us, but we are pretty happy that he sees lot of value in the code analysis feature we built. So I want to show you what we have, what he liked about it so much, and how you can also take advantage of that. All right, we are going to use the same app we just saw to demo that. Now, as I said, it is just another switch to the compiler. So whatever switch you've already been using, when you do cl.exe, just throw in another slash analyze switch, and you will see you'll be able to discover a lot more issues there. It actually looks at a lot more rules and report all these issues. If you are IDE person, if you wanted to run it from IDE, we have this nice little tool window from here, which is completely new in VS 2012. How many of you have used this feature in 2010 before? Okay, a couple. You might notice that this is completely different user experience. We have improved it. We want to make it easier for you guys to use. So you want to find this code analysis window, and all you need to do is to say, analyze my whole solution or this particular project. Just to save some time. Like John mentioned, it might slow down your compilation a little bit, somewhat. It's not horribly slow, but you can understand, because it's going to do compilation first. It's going to look at a few hundreds of rules and analyze your code against it. So it take, in this case, a minute or two, but I don't want you guys to watch me doing that. So I want to show you the results I ran earlier today. Once you've done that, it's going to show you the list of warnings, errors it found. And looks like, wow, I have got several issues I have to work with. Now, we have a search bar. I love search bar everywhere. Now we have it, got it everywhere. To filter down the results. So let's say I only care about, at this point, see if I have any buffer overrun issues in my code. I can search by overrun. Okay, filter down to just one result. I want to click on it. I want to show you what we have here. If you have used this before, you'll notice we provide a lot more information now in the tool window. Now, this is the title of your warning. This is a brief description. The key information we added in this release is what we called line explanation to the key events. Because many times that you found, well, code analysis reports an issue, but I don't quite understand why. Because I look at my code and it's all working fine. I don't understand why they got there. So this is try to help you. We provide this information there, like this is the logic, the code analysis engine walkthrough. Try to make sense of itself. This is how we got there, this is why, and you can walk through this and see if it makes sense to you. In this case, we're going to expand that. I can click on the first line, expand that. So the issue here, it says, is buffer overrun. There might be a buffer overrun when writing to custom state array. Because, why? Because you start with an array of four elements, right? You defined a four array of four elements. And then we move on to the next line. You see this, the second line is being highlighted with this red rectangle. Why we enter here? Because the analysis engine assumes this branch flag equals true. So it therefore it enters into this if branch. Okay? So this is where you possibly are writing to the fifth element. You tried to write to the fifth element. Why? Because you already iterated four elements in this for loop. And then coming out of it, you're trying to write to the fifth element. So in this case, it's pretty simple. But if you have your source code, these lines way far from each other, it might be hard for you to look at the code and understand why it reports such an error. So this is trying to help you to walk through the lines of code you have in there. So this is a pretty easy thing to fix, right? We just make it a three, if that's my intention. Now, while we are there, while we are in this method, I want to see if there are other issues in this particular method. It's pretty simple, but there might be other issues. I can copy this method. What I can do is to do another search using the method name. So you'll see, you'll be able to search for different kind of things, file name, method name, warning title, all kinds of things. Now we'll see it finds another issue that's also located in this method. So there's two readouts. Expand that, and again, to walk through the code. In this case, it's actually an uninitialized memory. Of course, there's a variable I defined, I didn't initialize it, and then try to use it, which is a pretty common thing that I might be making mistake of. Then you'll see that different lines are being highlighted for this different issue, right? So in this case, it says you have this character buffer index defined, okay? And then what happens is it enters this if branch, okay? And the next line is, you're trying to use this variable in your for loop. Why this might not be initialized. So in the same method, you're able to see two different kinds of warnings and walk you through different lines of code. Now, sometimes you want to fix this. Sometimes you don't. You understand the issue and you are OK with it. You will say, OK, I now understand it. Please do not report this issue in the future. You might want to throw in a suppress sentence there. Now, we added this feature in this release, which is, well, if you don't like it, suppress it in your source code. You don't have to type in yourself. You don't have to remember what it exactly should type in there. We just do that. And put in the pragma warning and disable this particular warning. You probably don't want to do the same in your real code for an initialized memory, but this is just for demo purpose. So once I do that, you'll notice that in the window, it's been crossed out. which means next time you run code analysis, it's going to skip this particular line. It will not report the same issue there. All right. Is it easy, straightforward? Is it better than what we had before? Good. Okay. Awesome. So if you're curious about what kind of rules we're running against, you can check it out. Go to your project. So actually, we'll make it a per project setting. So you can go to the property page, navigate to code analysis at the end. You can do a couple of things. Enable it on build. Sometimes some people like it that, right? I invoke code analysis as part of my build. I don't have to do one additional step to invoke it. You can check that. And the other thing we added for native in this release is the rule set concept. This is like to group the set of rules into a set so you can manage them easily. So we ship in the box a couple of rule sets. By default, we're using this, what we call Microsoft Native Recommended Rules. If you're curious, you can open that and see what exactly are the rules we're running here. If you expand native, all the rules that are checked are the ones being run by default. You can also set the different actions if you want a particular rule to be a warning, to be an error, or to be doing nothing. You can do that per rule. Sorry? Yes, we did. In 2010, we had about 150 rules. This release, we're almost double the number. So, but we still have provided the flexibility so that you can customize the rules you want to run. You might not be liking all these rules. Again, do a search, and maybe we do a buffer overrun. We like buffers. You'll see these are all the buffer rules that we ship in the box. Some of them are on by default, some of them are not. So you are able to customize what rules you want to run. Generally, we don't recommend you to change the default rule set that we ship. What we recommend is for you to create your own rule set file and then pick the rules you want to enable in that particular rule set. Just real quick, this is how you will be doing that. Go to your project, add a new item. You can do a search again if you cannot find it. Oops, I did it too fast. But what I did was find the rule set template and add a new one. So this is the new rule set. Now let's say these are all the rules we ship. Let's say we just want a buffer rule. Filter down and then pick all the rules. Save it. Give it a name. Buffer rules. Okay, save again. Now let's go back to the properties, back to code analysis. You'll see that this is being picked automatically. So you can just go and switch to this one and click OK. That's all you need to do. Meanwhile, you can also select multiple rule sets to apply for your solution. So maybe this is a buffer overrun particular rule set. Maybe you also care about localization issues. You create another rule set. You turn both on for your project. You can do that as well. All right, that's all I want to show you here. Let's go back. Just to summarize, in this release, we improved the user experience, the analysis capabilities. Besides the number of rules that we added, we also made huge amount of efforts to improve the accuracy of the analysis engine. So we don't want to give you a lot of false positives that you look around and you realize that's not your fault, it's the rule analysis engine's fault. We try to minimize those issues like that. But I'm not saying we achieved 100%. I don't think it's possible to do that. So we always have to balance between the number of false positives we are willing to stand with and versus the number of issues we should be reporting. So it's always a balance there. But I think although it's not 100%, there's a lot of value you can get out of here because it reports reasonable things. Maybe sometimes it's not your fault, it's other issues, but it's a good chance to start a conversation about the way the code is being written, because if the code analysis engine cannot understand the way the code is written, maybe some other people would not understand. Maybe there's a better way to write the same code. So there are cases like that. And of course, sometimes the code analysis engine, if you really think it's an analysis engine that's doing crazy things, let us know, and we'll fix that. But that's a continuous improvement that helps you improve your app, the quality of your app, but also include the quality of the code analysis engine itself. So I want to highlight 64-bit support. We finally got it. Yay. A lot of people have been asking about this. So we have this in this release. And another good news, we have enabled this feature to be available in all Visual Studio editions. It used to be in premium SKU only. Now it's down to Express. Although I should point out that Express only has the basic rules, like uninitialized variable, buffer overrun, all these basic things. In Pro and Plus, you get a lot more rules, like the 300 rules I mentioned, it's in Pro. But you get the very basic things in Express. And it's nice to just run them and see what it comes out. Other things that are available in Pro Plus, I didn't get to demo to you, is the concurrency rules. It's able to identify issues like race conditions, stuff like that. And also the customized rule set I just showed you, you also need Pro Plus to be able to use that. All right, last, I want to show you unit testing. So I mentioned you can use code analysis to identify some potential issues in your app, but I'm not saying you can rely on that and not be writing any tests. You still need tests, especially as a developer. We strongly recommend you to write lightweight unit tests so you know you keep them always running. So you know when you break it. When you make a change and your test stop working, you know there's an issue. So I want to show you the experience we have in the next release. Who here went to the unit testing talk on Monday by Peter Provost? Okay, 3, 4, 5, okay. So you guys have seen the experience already, but I want to show that to other folks who haven't seen that. For this, I want to use a different app just for the purpose of this demo, because it's everyone's favorite calculator app, and it's easy to understand. So it's a calculator app, nothing special. It does all this stuff. This is another MFC app, actually. If you look at the structure of my solution, this is my MFC app. This is my what we call business logic. This is where all the calculation is happening. This is the test app project we are going to talk about later. Now, if we open this file, calculatorService.cpp file, it does all this fancy calculation here. Really complicated. So for this kind of functions, for this kind of app, small like this, you probably don't want to start the whole process of doing UI automation tests, because it's pretty heavyweight. So what you can do is to write a few unit tests that are only testing the functionalities of this method. It doesn't have to be UI related. You're just testing if add is actually an add, if it's return the value it's supposed to return. So one of the things we add in this release was unit testing for native C++. So it's not managed C++. You don't have to throw slash CLR anymore. It's pure native. The way you do that is go to new project, and you will find under C++, there's a test. You'll find native unit test project. Okay, you add that, just like I did before. And then one step you might want to remember is to add the project reference between the projects, because the project I'm going to be testing is this calculus service. Other than that, I did nothing to this project so far. Okay, so let's see what the template gives us. This is the one file that comes with the template. Very simple. It includes this CPP unit header file, a namespace. By default, it created a test class. Inside that is a default test method, which is empty. Okay, so now first of all, let me include the calculusservice.header file because I'll be testing that. I should include that so I can use it. Okay, now I'm ready to write my first unit test. We are going to call this test add test, so I'll be testing add functionality here. To do that, I'll be defining a few variables. And I'll be defining calculus service so I can use it. Okay. Then give some initial value. Good I remember to do that, otherwise I'll get an initialized memory warning. Okay, now we're ready to do some calculation. We're going to do expect to be A plus B. For actual value, we are going to be using calculus service add and passing A and B. Okay, pretty straightforward. Now, all I need to do is to compare these two values and see if they're equal. Now, we provide, of course, assert in the unit test framework. Now, these are the options you can do. Intentionally, we make it, we didn't ship a lot of different methods out of the box. We intentionally want to keep it simple so we don't overwhelm the developers who are using unit test framework. But if you can take a look at that, and if you see major things that's missing, that you would like to have, let us know. But these are the out of box methods. In this case, I'll be using the basic equal and passing that. Okay, that's all I need to do to write my first unit test. Now I'm going to build this solution and bring up the test explorer. Now, what you will see is this is a new window. We come up with in this release that's exclusively for unit testing. It meant to be lightweight, simple, and easy to use. In this case, once I build my solution, it's going to go and look for all the tests I have and just discover it automatically. There's nothing else you need to do. I can go ahead and run the test, which passed. Okay. Of course, there are more that you can do with that. Now, what's the easiest way to write unit tests? To write a second unit test? Copy paste. Yes, you're right. Now I'm ready to write my second unit test. Let's try to test the divide. Okay. Basically, let's just a few modification. Divide, of course, I can build. It will discover one more test. I can run that, which should pass. Okay. But you probably don't want to do that copy-paste thing all the time, because I'm defining all these variables in each of the test methods, which might not be the best way to do things. Oftentimes, we wanted to make them make an initialized method, which runs before each test is being run. So you get things initialized properly before each test. So we can extract that part. I want to define that at the test class level. I want to initialize these values into, we have this test method initialize. Just give a name, and I'll be putting the numbers here. So this method runs before each test method runs. Does that make sense? So whatever value you reset your test, it comes back to this every time you start a new test, so you don't mess up numbers between tests. Now I can delete all these and still be able to run to get the same thing. Good question. Not yet. But you should expect it's coming. It's really, really high on the list. We still wanted to get to it in this release, but it was not enough time for us. But good feedback. So let's do some more things about the divide test. So this runs pretty well, but what if I'm changing the value of b to 0? Whoa. What's going to happen here? Exception, because we're trying to divide by 0. Okay, let's try to see what happens there. Okay, now I got one test fail, which is expected. Because it's so exception. But I want to highlight that even though that test failed because of exception, the other test was still able to run. This is important, right? You don't want the test run to stop in the middle of that. All right, let's see how we can fix that. Now, in this case, if I'm going to be divide a number by 0, I probably don't need expect, because all I expect is an exception. It doesn't matter what number that is. So instead of using r equal, I will be using another function called expected exception. So in this case, if exception is indeed being thrown, we assert that's exception, then the test case will pass. That's expectation. Let's take a look at how we can use that. This is actually being implemented as a template. Now you pass in the type of exception you're expecting, and you pass in a function object to it. Now let's try to use it. Now the exception I will be expecting will be calculus service :: divide by 0 exception. The reason I'm using that is because if I look at the code, it says if b equals 0, so this type of exception. So that's the type of exception I'm expecting in my test code. And then I need to pass in a functor, which I don't have yet. What the functor should do is actually should be doing the same thing that this is doing, right? I just need to put that and point that functor to this particular method. So we are going to define the functor here. For that, I'm going to be using a lambda expression, which is a new feature we added in 2010. It's a new standard feature. So start with this. This is basically to tell the compiler this is a lambda. That's a start. and you'll be putting brackets. In this case, there's no parameters passing, so it's empty. And then this represents the return value, which is an int. And this is your lambda body. All I want to do is to put this guy into the lambda body. Of course, I wanted to add a return because I told lambda I'm going to be returning an integer. I want to delete that. You will see squiggles, which is fine. I didn't give a type. So here's another feature we added, which is also a standard feature, auto. It's like anonymous type in C#. Because you don't have to worry about the type, because our compiler at compile time actually would understand what type it is. You just tell them, well, it's a type. I don't care what type it is. Just type in auto. And you still see squiggles, which is the reason why is that? Because you're trying to use your local variables in your lambda body. And the way you tell lambda that I will be using those local variables is to type in an echo to tell lambda to capture all the local variables so I can use them in my lambda body. So with that, I get rid of all the squiggles. I want to compile. And I want to rerun. And it passed. It runs fast. Okay. Now let's add a few more tests. No, I don't want you to be watching me typing anymore. So I'll be adding a few more tests. Nothing fancy. It's just a few more tests to test subtract, multiply, poll, all these functions. I can compile again. You'll see that. I run them all. It all passed. Everything looks good. Now, the real use of that is so far so good, but what if I will be making a change to my source code, and then I maybe accidentally break my unit test. Then I know there's an issue. So let's say I'm a careless developer, accidentally making some changes to my add method, which will make my test to fail. Now, you can, of course, build your solution again and go back to the Explorer and run all the tests again. You will see a failed test. We want to make it easy for you. So we add a new menu item, which is called Run Tests After Build. So you can turn this on, and you don't have to worry about it anymore. So every time you do a build, we automatically build all the tests and run them all. And we will let you know when there's a failure. So you don't have to worry about that. Let's try that and see what happens. If we're lucky, it should fail one of the tests. Oh, yay. Add test failed, right? And we are going to pop up a fail test to the top of your list. So because that's something you should care about. You probably don't care about everything else that passed. So we pop up the first one to the top, so you'll notice that there's a failure. All right, let's go back. Just to summarize, we have a new native C++ unit test framework in our next version. Also worth mentioning is it's available in all editions. It used to be only in Professional, I think. Now it's available in Express as well. The continuous run after build I just showed you, it's probably a premium-only feature. It could be down to Pro. We haven't fully closed on that, but it's not in Express, just so you're not surprised. The other one is the whole unit test framework is totally extensible. So if you guys are writing unit tests using other unit test framework, but you really like this experience in Visual Studio, that's all fine. You can plug in third-party native framework into Visual Studio. You can get exact same experience as we had here. All you need to do is an adapter that knows how to run those tests. So once you have the adapter plug in, you can discover all your tests, whether it's C++ unit or other unit test framework. You can plug in and get the exact same thing. Real quick, I want to show you the code coverage integration. So we got the unit tests here. Would be nice if I can get a code coverage data out of that, and just to get an idea of how many code has been covered. If you had used the feature before, you might remember that there are many steps you have to config here and there to instrument your binary first, remember which ones to check, and get results. Now, in this release, we made it very, very easy. How easy it is? It's just one click. All you need to do is say analyze code coverage from this window. Now, if I do that, it's actually doing a lot of things. Well, it's really fast. I didn't even have a chance to talk about it. What happened was it builds your tests, right? It runs all of your tests. It discovers all the dependent projects your tests rely on. So it's not going to instrument every single thing in your solution. It's going to instrument only the things that your tests are using at runtime dynamically. So you don't have to worry about any of that. You just look at the result and see what it got. We didn't change the UI of this. So if we look at calculus service, add, divide, multiply, it has pretty good coverage, right? Covered is 100%, divided is 42%. Let's see what happens there. Double click. Okay, you guys can see the color. The light blue are the ones that have been covered. The red line is obviously the one that hasn't been covered. Why? It's because we modify our divide test to be testing the case of B equals zero, but we didn't excise the normal path, right? So that's something you haven't covered. You might want to go back and add another test to cover this path. So it's really easy to get unit tests and code coverage data. So we made that integration and work well together. All right, let's go back. Summary of code coverage, it's a lot more simplified experience and integrated with unit test framework. You can analyze the code coverage by single click in VS, no more configuration. You can analyze for all tests, you can select a few tests just to see what coverage these particular tests have got. Also, for any of the third-party unit test framework you plug into Visual Studio, you can get exact same integration with code coverage. All right, that's pretty much all the stuff I want to show you. Just a summary. We made a lot of the ALM features available for C++, especially when we made them available in Express so that you can make the full use of those features. Our goal was to help you guys to build safer, reliable, high-quality C++ apps. So we made code analysis, unit testing, and profiler all available in Express. So you get them all for free. You got nothing to lose. Just give them a try. Some of those are handy, and we hope that's helpful. And useful for you guys. And of course, you know, plus all the general ALM features in the new version you can use for C++. So put them together, you have a pretty long list that you can use in the different lifecycle stage of your development. So we hope that's something helpful. Pretty much on time, and I can take some questions if you have. Yes. Yeah?
You didn't mention what SKUs that would
be available. Good question. So the question was the architectural discovery feature, what SKU is going to be available? Likely, it's going to be Ultimate only, just based on what we had in past. We haven't fully disclosed the whole SKU plans for all these features. I just listed the ones I know of. Architecture discovery, I would say likely Ultimate.
Another question on architecture.
Sure.
Every time you're going through it, it looked like it had to recompile your source code and regenerate the architecture. And I'm just wondering, it seems to me like it would be good for a program that's kind of a maintenance program, and it's a big program.
Okay, so the question is, looks like we have to recompile the whole solution every time we generate the dependence graph. Is there a way to do, like, only look at incremental changes and only make changes of that? Nothing that I'm aware of at this point that can do that. Basically, we look at the binary information in there. So it doesn't matter if you have the source code or if you have compiled recently. If you want, only look at the binary you have compiled 3 days ago, that's fine. You can just crack open that binary. But I'm not aware of the functionality you just mentioned. But I think that's great feedback. That's definitely something we should look into. Yes. Yes, I understand. That's also why we also have this bottom-up approach that you can just filter to the things you care about and build diagram from there. Because we know in reality, a lot of people have huge, huge solutions, especially C++. Yes. Oh, sorry, I can let that gentleman go first.
When you were creating the diagrams, you were building in release mode. Is there any way to prevent that, an application from being reverse engineered to create these diagrams? That was your question?
Yeah.
So the question was, is there a way to reverse engineer?
To prevent reverse engineering your binaries to get these diagrams, because you were building in release mode, so I was wondering if this is taken only from the PDDs, or is it also taken from the EXE?
It's both. So the question was it looking at the PDBs or the EXE's information, right? We look at both.
So someone would have to hack your PDB to be able to deconstruct an architecture diagram.
The question is what could somebody obtain just from the binaries to reverse engineer?
You can, yes. But there are some information we don't have just from looking at the binary. So we will need the PDBs to complete the diagram, if we're able to drill into to see all the information there.
And is there any way to disable the feature to obfuscate the code to prevent the diagram generation from the binaries?
To prevent the diagram from generating?
To prevent reverse engineering in case you don't want third parties to get access to your source code structure.
Interesting. I don't think there's a way today to prevent someone from reverse engineering a binary. But that's an interesting idea. We should talk more about that. So set permission on that binary and okay, that's interesting. All right.
Well, it wouldn't work on an encrypted binary, right? I mean, if you encrypt your binary with Armadillo or
not exactly like debugger. So it depends on what information you have in the binary. All right. So if no questions, thank you very much for coming. I really appreciate your time. I will be at the TLC after session at the Visual Studio booth if you want to stop by, have a chat. Otherwise, there's a few more sessions. If you are interested in LLM, there are sessions, foundation, and unit testing sessions. which already happened, but you can look at the recordings if you want. If you want more C++ sessions, we have more coming. There's a talk for the Metro apps on Thursday, and there's one talk about C++ AMP that Kate is going to be there this afternoon in the same room if you want to stay until then. Welcome. That's all I have. I want to thank you again for coming. Thank you very much.